If you're a founder, entrepreneur, or business leader with a special interest in emerging technologies, you are not going to want to miss this episode. In the conversation you're about to listen to, I speak with Matt Lowe, founder of Invenio Talent Partners, and Dave Edmonds, one of his top technical recruiters. We get into interesting corners of the current recruitment strategy and employment landscape of businesses involved in Web3, AI, and other frontier technologies. And of course, if you're someone looking at your own career path, seeking to elevate your own technical skills or job opportunities, you'll want to listen in for valuable tips and for insights into the thinking of some of the people you're hoping to work with. Now, the reason for this little intro is listening back, I couldn't help but reflect that this is also a really great episode for parents of young people who might be entering the job market, especially those who take a special interest in technology. The way we go about sourcing opportunities and building our resumes has certainly changed over the last decade. So we sort of get into the nitty-gritty and the avenues in which companies and talent are finding one another today in emerging tech, which are definitely creative and resourceful. However, I also couldn't help but stop and wonder if young women and girls are making sure that they're inserting themselves in the right places or ensuring that they're finding ways to build strong professional networks, finding communities where they can not only learn, but also build their own professional profiles, particularly in emerging tech. As an example, later on in the episode, the guests touch on how they often look to online platforms such as Reddit, Discord, and Twitter. And I stopped to ask myself whether or not that's a place where young women and girls interested in technology are finding themselves. I actually don't really know the answer. And admittedly, as an elder millennial, it may not be my place to make that judgment or assumption or generalization, but I do think that it's safe to assume that if we did a demographics poll of those platforms, that we would find the majority of users are male. Now, this is certainly not a criticism of recruiters. I think it's innovative and super interesting that they're spending time on platforms like this. I think my point is more to plant a seed, especially for parents or mentors of young women to think about, are there gaps in online communities? Are there alternative platforms that can be used or existing platforms that can be more effectively used to help young women be more visible in this emerging job landscape? Anyhow, that's just food for thought. Matt and Dave get into a bunch of interesting stuff, including what to think about as you hire your initial teams and further along as you scale. Some of the things I was curious about that we get into is like where to find top talent in tech. What are folks who are looking for jobs thinking about as they enter spaces where there might be less job security or at least more volatility? What about company equity? Are emerging tech organizations thinking about culture? And what are job seekers and employers thinking about when it comes to AI? That's a big one. Anyhow, we get into all this and more. I really hope you enjoyed this episode of From the Blockchain. Please make sure to subscribe wherever you're tuning in, leave a review, and find us on our social channels, which now include Facebook and Instagram Threads. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to From the Blockchain. I am your host, Ashley Smith. I'm very excited to be here with all of you today with two special guests. We're going to be talking a bit about the work environment and landscape and talent seeking landscape when thinking about emerging technologies, including Web3. So what are companies doing? What are they looking for? What sort of challenges, unique challenges are they having? And how are they finding help when looking at a new world where folks who they perhaps are looking to hire may not have a long CV in terms of the actual ecosystem they're playing in, which is obviously going to be the case. Today, we are speaking with Matt Lowe and Dave Edmonds from Invenio Talent Partners. They are doing some unique stuff in talent recruitment, and I'm really excited to dive deep into their expertise, their longstanding experience prior to some of this emerging tech, and what they're really seeing in the current landscape. So I'm going to start with saying hello to Matt. Matt, why don't you introduce yourself, who you are, and what you do at the company?
So a little bit of context. Dave and I worked together at Invenio. I actually founded the company a few years ago with my partner. And it all came about through a decade of prior experience recruiting and hiring for a number of different companies, mostly tech. And to your point, a lot of emerging tech. Did it a lot of different ways. But when you deal with emerging techs, that usually means you're a little bit more bleeding edge. The company oftentimes is a little bit earlier, more startup-y. Because of that, it's a little bit more unique. People know less about what they're hiring. There's less people that you can hire. And so being able to be more flexible in your model and how you approach things, how you partner is really important. And that was really the impetus for us creating and founding Invenio. The idea there being, rather than some of the more traditional contingent type of models where you basically get paid to put a bum in a seat, and sometimes the alignment of, let's say, interest is not optimal, we could come in on a model where we would be your partners. You would pay us for our time and effort rather than just hiring someone specific. And that way we could talk more strategic things, like how you can hire for some of this emerging talents, what the market looks like for that, how you need to think about the process of doing that. A lot of questions that founders, business owners, leaders have answers for some of the questions, but not always all of the questions. And oftentimes don't have the experience of doing it at the next stage. And what I mean by that, you know, if you're hiring for a 10-person company, it's not the same as a 100-person company or 500 or 1,000.
Well, before we move over to say hi to Dave, maybe just to clarify, Invenio works with a range of scale, like different sized companies, and with a focus on this emerging tech side. Can you just give me an idea of who your typical client, what they look like?
Absolutely. So typical client is, for the most part, earlier stage. So startup. You might have funding like a seed, series A, B, C type of thing, and growing. So they're at that portion of their life cycle where they're scaling and usually getting into the next stage. We have some larger, more mature companies that we work with as well. But majority of our companies are at that stage. Industry, domain-wise, all over the place. Everything from like autonomous driving to AI of many different kinds to, of course, Web3. We've been doing a lot of that over the years. Something we're really excited about personally, of course, to just traditional software, you know, SaaS type of companies. But you name it, we've done a little bit of it.
And Dave Emmons, welcome to the show as well. Dave, you're a technical recruiter with background in hiring, engineering, and go-to-market staff for some of the fastest growing companies in Web3 and tech. I know you've had a range of experience with, you know, startup style companies to some pretty big ones as well. Dave, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how, you know, you got involved in Invenio and what you're thinking about in this landscape?
Totally. Well, thanks for the intro. Nice to be on here, Ashley. My story, very similar to Matt's, started off in the Vancouver market in a boutique agency, servicing more of the Vancouver market, startups here, and established companies, mainly on the tech side, like you said, go-to-market and product. During COVID, made a pivot over to the San Francisco market, where I was supporting rapidly growing companies like TikTok, and other startups in the Bay and across the US. So that's where I started getting to a deeper kind of line into, call it, more enterprise Web3. So yeah, my background comes from more rapid scale, highly technical roles. And like Matt said, kind of a similar background of, if it is highly technical and those people are hard to find or maybe don't even exist yet, that's the stuff that I would love to work on and I have been working on. It's with Invenio, joined the team earlier this year. And yeah, we're just making a big concerted push into even more frontier tech, you know, a lot of Web3, like Matt said, but really, like I like to say, if it is just getting started, we like to hire for it.
So I guess before we dive a little deeper into some of the unique challenges and some of the anecdotes that maybe you can help bring some color to this experience for our audience, what I'm wondering is, I'm sure there's folks listening and they are probably wondering just about the landscape in general. So what I mean by that is, over the last year and a half, there's been a lot of ups and downs, not only in Web3, blockchain, crypto technology, but of course, just in the tech sector in general. We know that companies have tightened their purse strings to some extent. Perhaps that might be changing, you know, at the moment. Maybe you can speak to that. I'm not sure, that's just kind of my feel. But if someone's listening here and thinking about what you do, they're probably wondering, are people spending money on hiring? And are they spending money on having people help them hire for these particular roles? So what are you seeing in the landscape right now, generally revolving emerging tech and perhaps with blockchain and Web3 tech in particular?
It's a good question. We could probably spend a lot of time diving into that one, to be honest. Like you said, it's been a bit of a tough year, couple of years for sure, specifically in Web3, but in tech in general. The good news is, at least how we're seeing it through our lens in the market, it seems to be picking up. Optimistically, I'm looking into earlier half of next year as when we'll start to see some of the actual companies in the market start to turn around and start to build again. As to the feel of the market as it is today, it's slower. The fact of the matter is that there's a big crunch on these companies to spend smartly, not necessarily conservatively, but if you have pressure on you to spend in a certain kind of way, then you're going to want to be really practical about it, really conscious about where you're spending. So mm-hmm. are people spending money to hire and with companies like us to help them hire? Yes. But rather than say like everyone's hiring and everyone's trying to find something, it's like there's a select group in the market that is hiring a lot and mm-hmm. hiring for more difficult roles, more complex searches, and they're spending more money in kind of a more concentrated manner than a broader manner.
Are you able to add some clarity as to like what those types of roles are that people are actively looking at right now?
Well, it's a good time to be in AI.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's like a hot button thing, but the more senior roles, the more technical roles, the more niche roles, whether that's like domain or industry expertise, those are still in hot demand. The search for good people has not stopped.
Yeah. It does seem like this very strategic approach to hiring, as you mentioned, matters more right now. It probably matters more than people like to recognize just generally. But if you're, as you mentioned, being thoughtful about your spending, you're probably also being thoughtful about onboarding, training, trying to avoid much in way of turnover, building culture, you know, in a new organization, in a startup. I'd like to know how important is culture when hiring, for example, in these technical roles? Is this something that business leaders are thinking about actively?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that they were in startups. I mean, culture, your early hires, like you said, these strategic points early in a company's life cycle are really key. Culture does really play itself in when you're building that team off the ground. Really, you're putting a lot of autonomy, a lot of ownership onto the individuals you're going to be bringing on board. As Matt mentioned before, you're 0 to 5, you're 5 to 10. You know, culture is key because these are the people who are building the foundations of the product you're bringing to market. The skills are important to actually get the job done, but these are the people that you're creating an entity with, creating a product with. So that's where that culture piece comes in. You know, you all have to have the same vision, belief system, temperament, even to a degree, because everyone's going to be building this product together. So yeah, that's where we do find culture is a big thing that shows up early, and then it continues to grow itself out and kind of evolves as the company grows itself out into a different life cycle.
I have sort of an ignorant follow-up question to that. I wonder a little bit about sort of the stereotypical tech person. Let's even say tech bro, like someone who's really understands and who's an engineer. I think we all have an idea of what that person looks like, and I don't necessarily associate that person. And I'm sorry, tech bros. I'm not meaning to be offensive, but it's not something I necessarily associate with, like team culture and you know, that sort of very inclusive personality. And you know, EQ, is that something that you guys think about or talk about? EQ has just been in the narrative so much, I think, especially when thinking about senior leadership as an example. But I'm wondering whether or not it's in the narrative when it comes to important roles like this.
It's pretty important. It's among my opinion, some of the most important factors that you can have. You know, outside of the baseline of whether someone can do a job is whether or not you want to work with them and yeah, do the job with them. Whether or not companies recognize that, whether or not leaders and hiring managers are prioritizing it, is a different question, mm-hmm, but it's one that we put forward a lot to them. Sometimes if that's not something that's brought up, it's something that we will flag to them, you know, and be like, is this important to you? Because should be. And what does that look like? But you know, on a, like just a really pragmatic nature of the hiring problem, sometimes it doesn't matter because you're under such pressure, you're under the gun, and it's like, look, we just need to deliver. Like it has to be done, and we'll suck it up and we'll have not as good culture or not as good people who fit our culture in order to get it done. Whether or not that's a long-term play, you know, is a whole other story. But it can sometimes, you know, just be what it is. That being said, you know, we try to push through, like, look, you should think about this because there's a lot of extra baggage that comes with hiring someone who may not be a good fit in the long term.
Ultimately, they'll end up coming back to you looking for your assistance once again if it doesn't work out. I do wonder, though, that brings up such a great point. I'd love to know, generally speaking, like, what is the sort of life cycle of the hiring process generally when you're looking at these more technical roles, when companies are looking to move really fast? And I can appreciate that because I think that, just for our audience sake, at a point in 2022, for example, if folks had their stuff together in a matter of 2 months and ready to go, that may have made a huge difference in their funding and their ability to go to market, where if it took maybe 4 or 5 months, that it may have simply been too late for them to have the same sort of success. So it is a conundrum. So I'd love to know generally when folks are looking for these more technical roles, what kind of time frame are they typically expecting?
The short answer is everyone wants it like yesterday. There's never been a time where they're like, hey, Matt, can you help us hire someone for like 6 months from now? It's like, no. usually what we actually have to tell them is like, there's the triangle of time, cost, and quality. Pick two, right? Like if you want it really fast, it's either at the sacrifice of it being really expensive or maybe the person not necessarily being as skilled, let's say, or like whatever portion of that you want to optimize for. And the reality, again, of it is that there's only so much you can do, right? Companies always want people to be hired as soon as possible. So, you know, a realistic timeline is probably like maybe like a month and a half.
That's fair. I do want to get into a bit about talent pool. But first, maybe before we jump into that, I would like to ask you what advice you might give to startups or early stage companies that are in the Web3 space, as an example. What advice would you give them regarding building and scaling their technical teams effectively?
There's a lot of different things you can kind of jump off with. I think it really depends on where that company is in their life cycle as well. For example, they have a lot of funding, they've got a MVP that they need to get to market and actually like turn this into a viable product that they can start getting funding customers around. That is going to be a little bit of a different search and different, maybe, looking for here. The bar to what the talent they're looking for is going to be a little bit different than if they already have a product to market and they're just trying to grow their teams. So, you know, you do have situations where the market is matured. You have individuals out there that may have already done similar projects. I'll use the example of Web3 exchanges. There's been a million built. There's a lot of people here who've now built exchanges that you can maybe move that over to a similar project. However, you know, you run into situations where maybe, you know, you're building something, as we mentioned, that hasn't been built before. Well, then you're going to have to look at maybe more of an MVP model, minimum viable product. Does the person have the skills and the ambition to build the thing that's not been built yet? So that's my little quick answer, but I'm going to hand it back to Matt. But I think it really does depend on where that company is in their product lifecycle.
It's a question of why usually first is like, okay, you want to hire this, but why are you hiring it for it? And ultimately, what I normally put back to the companies we work with is the answer to why is usually they need some kind of business impact. And what is the business impact, right? And you start from there. If they have something to Dave's point, really well defined, you have a really good idea what this looks like, then the process to get towards it is relatively straightforward. You know what it looks like, you just kind of replicate it. If on the other hand, you have no idea what it looks like, the process of where you start hiring can be a lot more vague, and what you're hiring for can be a lot less defined or less clearly defined. And so you need to start by asking the questions of, okay, you know, where do we need to start? Do we need to start at like, what even is it that we need to build? And like, we need to find the people who can ask those questions and get those answers. Is it the person who knows what we're building, but needs to kind of like define what that will look like, shape it out? There's a lot of different things, but ultimately it's like, what do you need to get done? What is the actual impact you want out of this? And then you kind of define from there what that looks like and start to build what kind of hiring process you need to support that, because it'll look very different depending on what that is.
I wonder if folks are listening and they're thinking about hiring and they're in the position where, you know, they'd like to seek out support through an agency such as yours. First, I wonder how frequent do companies come to you well-prepared? Like, I guess my question is, if they're feeling underprepared, is that normal? And just to build on what you just mentioned, do you help walk them through some of these things if they're not quite there yet?
A lot of the reasons why we built Invenio is because the emerging tech, the early stage companies that we love to work with, they don't have all the answers to those questions. Sometimes they don't even know to ask those questions.
Right.
And so in the way we work right now, where we can partner in and embed ourselves, we really have an opportunity to take a seat at the table and ask these questions. We have the benefit of having hired for hundreds, if not thousands, of companies and roles. And we've seen a lot of the goofy stuff, you know, the really strange things that people have done. And we can give you some insight into how maybe you could do it better, what kind of questions you should be asking. And the way we do it now, like, that's what you would hire us for. You would bring us on to figure out your talent recruitment. And it doesn't matter if you don't know the questions, you have all of the answers, you're somewhere in between, we can sit there and help you figure it out, help you get through to the right type of process. And hopefully, you know, the idea is we leave you enough with kind of the process we develop, the ideas, the strategies, the tactics, that eventually you scale beyond needing us. And, you know, we go to help on the next person who maybe hasn't kind of nailed all of that, or just, you know, bring us back whenever you need help. We're happy to do that too.
I have a sort of almost selfish question, and it's purely curiosity, but like, I have to wonder, in particular with the startup type of company that you're working with, the founders and or the CEOs, typically speaking, how often are they coming with a tech background? And the reason I'm asking is, as an example, I've spent a lot of time, you know, looking at blockchain Web3 technology over the last few years. I'm by no means a technologist. I don't understand how it all works. I just know that there's potential for things to work. I also have a background in an industry and sector where I'm like, I have some ideas, right? And I'm just wondering how often you're finding people like me with ideas who are able to go and get funding, but then like this technical side of like how to really build what it is you're wanting to do. Do a lot of people look like me, or are they more the tech people coming forward that you're seeing that are having success?
I'll answer this in a couple parts. In particular to Web3, well, I should say in particular to emerging tech,
yes,
you are more the exception than, you know, the general person. And because it's emerging tech, there's bias there. Outside of emerging tech, I think it's a lot more balanced. Like, I think it's closer to 50-50. And in my personal opinion, whether or not you are a technical person as a founder or leader or whatever, generally, if I'm going to be honest, the more important piece is being able to drive the business. Whether that is getting funding, or that is finding you know, clients, or that's figuring out how to build a product or service or whatever that is, that side of the business is the business, in my opinion. Ultimately, you know, tech aside, you can figure out a lot of things on how to have it work. Like, it doesn't even necessarily need to be a tech solution all the time. But if you don't have a business model, a business plan, a way to build a business, a way to reach your demographic, you can't just do tech for tech, is what I'm trying to say. That being said, you know, especially emerging tech, but in general, someone still has to build it at the end of the day. So it really is a partnership that requires both sides of the equation. The more niche side of it usually is the tech side in emerging tech. So that's why, you know, there's a big bias towards, okay, like, there's a lot of technical founders in emerging tech, because like, who else would be pushing the emerging tech as the tech people, generally speaking? But there's, in the wider scheme of the world, the majority of owners are not necessarily technical. It's like people who have a business idea and they want to build the business. Doesn't necessarily mean that you know how to I don't know, manufacture a car or like take out the garbage yourself or whatever, right? It's not that important if you have the drive and the ability to build team and product and service around it.
I guess it's a lot about connecting the dots, and that's obviously a big part of your role, what you do. So in that vein, I would love to know a little bit about the talent pool. Now, you guys, as you mentioned, are based here in Vancouver, but I'm sure you do work abroad and in different areas. Through the pandemic, the big, you know, you turn on the news and everyone's talking about you can't even hire for like a fast food restaurant. Like there's such a shortage of potential employees. And I think that's shifted, and a bit of a power shift as well. And obviously you can't compare entry level work to something like this, but I would love to know, generally speaking, what does the talent pool look like right now? Is it strong? Are one thing, and I'm sorry, I'm kind of known for my run on questions, but one thing I, you know, you do see potentially is when there's a bit of a shift in the interest in emerging tech, people maybe go to different places, they move to different sectors, or they shy away and go to something that's maybe a little bit more stable, steady, reliable in the short term, something like that. I'm wondering, what are you seeing? Like, how is the talent pool? Are folks actively looking for these types of roles right now? And what's on their minds?
I think respective to the niche that we're talking about, it can be a little bit different. Like with Web3 right now, I think we mentioned this at the beginning, it's not to say that it's not hiring, it's just a lot more of the funding is now in AI. So those people still exist. They're still there. The market's still strong, but kind of like you said, if the more senior people who are going to be working within these roles leading initiatives, they're not always going to be pivoting out to say like blockchain over to AI, because a lot of these people in AI at the senior level have probably already existed for a while, like the NLP engineers, these kinds of people. It's not like they just kind of manifested, like they've been doing this probably since before COVID. So the talent pool's good. I think you do see a bit of a pivot in terms of like maybe your middle tier engineers who have that kind of more versatile but not overly niched experience. For example, about just web developers who might be able to leverage their skill set in building a crypto platform versus maybe an AI platform. And now the tool set's kind of a little bit more democratized. You do see a bit of a shift. So the talent market is there. I think it just starts coming down to, with our clients and those who are hiring, where's that bar? You know, are you taking the approach where you could bring somebody on board who's a strong engineer who maybe hasn't done this yet, but is super interested in, say, like artificial intelligence at this point? If you go back to the Web3 side, if you're doing hiring, are you still able to bring in people that I've either done this before, or are you still okay kind of taking that AI approach like they are now with that MVP model, getting somebody on board with that skill set who's used to a fast growing company, like Matt said, getting a product to market, and they can learn the rest. So the market is good. It's just where the kind of dilution of availability of roles are is just kind of shifted away from Web3 for right now into the higher funded areas.
I wonder how AI generally has impacted the thinking around these sorts of roles. And I don't mean so much about the sort of attention that AI is getting, but more about what might some of these technical folks be thinking about when it comes to how AI might impact the work that they actually do. Like, are some of them perhaps feeling more empowered because they're able to, this is super naive of me, but like they're able to now, you know, develop more code faster, check things, look for security issues, or are they feeling more tentative and nervous because they feel like their skill, their very unique skill, might be at risk a little bit because of this automated technology?
It's a subjective answer, but my take and my opinion on it is that the people who are more senior, more experienced in their roles will look at AI as a tool that can supplement what they can do. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. A photographer that I know is using generative AI to like draft out photography scenes. So like he'll be like, oh, I'm going to do a beach set. And so sunset, beach, wedding dress, certain time of the day, certain kind of clothing, whatever. And he uses that to get an idea of how to picture the actual photography set that he's going to do. And then he creates that as a storyboard. And he uses that for his actual photography. Similarly to the examples you gave, there's lots of engineers that I know these days who are using whatever AI tool to write their test cases. There's artists who are using generative AI to like create crazy scenes, and then, you know, they build off of that. So I think, and from my experience, anecdotal as it is with a lot of different people, AI will be very supplementary, at least mm-hmm. as it is right now. I mean, for sure, there's definitely going to be someone who's like, you know, I'm a AI generative search term dude, and, you know, I'm just going to create stuff for you and I'll do it cheaper and blah, blah, blah. But at least right now, we're not at the point where that replaces someone who's truly a craftsperson who like knows mm-hmm. their craft and has that experience and can really do crazy stuff with it. It'll just make them faster at it.
Metaphorically, to build on Matt's point, a lot of the time when you're talking with engineers, AI is a lot like a nail gun to a carpenter. It's maybe before they use a nail and hammer, but like the nail gun never replaced the carpenter. They can just now hammer more nails faster.
Yeah, that makes sense. I do wonder from an organizational perspective, business leaders, are they talking to you about AI in this kind of context? Like, are they telling you or asking you, do we really need this role, XYZ? Or can we just get AI to do it? And on top of that, if that's not what they're thinking, are they prioritizing talent who know how to use AI effectively? Like, is that something that they're talking to you about and wanting to discuss with prospective employees?
So the way this has worked anecdotally, because we've actually had this come up a lot over the last like year or whatever, mm-hmm. This happens with a lot of emerging tech, by the way. It's like mm-hmm. emerging tech X has happened. Every single company out there is like, what is this? What can we do with this? How do we do this? And what ends up happening is you either, one, have someone at the company who knows a little bit about it, it's excited. It's like, I'm going to champion this and like, give me some budget and some time and I'll do what I can. And here's the business case. The more common scenario, no one in company knows what this is. Really, someone has to do research and they're like, okay, like ultimately, let's just hire someone who knows what they're talking about here. Like, what are we doing with this? Or three, it's like, that's just a fad. Screw it. Like, you know, this is mm-hmm. nothing to do with our business. Most common right now with AI in particular is like, they were already an AI company. They don't care. If they're not an AI company, it's like, okay, what can AI do to improve our business? Is it replacing anyone? No. That's just not there yet. But it's creating new roles, actually, where it's like, okay, like, can we hire someone who's going to take whatever, you know, AI is a very vague general term, whatever AI business case we have and actually do something with it that's useful to the company, hire that person. We're going to spend some time, some money, some budget there. And like, we'll look at it like 6 months, a year from now, and did it work or did it not? mm-hmm. You know, if it worked, great. Maybe we can build more of a team. If it didn't work, well, okay, we took a crack and we can at least say we have some kind of AI in the company, kind of a deal. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much been like the last several company asks that we've had. Like, hey, like, we don't have anyone who really does AI here. We have some people who could maybe help them, but not lead the AI charge. Can you help us hire someone who can do that, basically? Yeah, and like I said, applies to everything. Like, same thing happened with Web3 originally, same thing happened with every other random emerging tech.
I wonder about some of the more sort of expanded areas within an organization in terms of whether or not you touch it with the work that you do. So just to your point, like AI, Web3 tech, it's kind of some organizations or companies may be looking at the underlying tech to help build their products, and that might be all that they're looking to do. I say that so dismissively, but others are wanting to really build it into their infrastructure. So whether it's about supply chain management, or they're looking at their marketing strategy. And so, you know, here on the show, one of the things we've talked about in terms of blockchain technology is like these loyalty programs that people are starting to experiment with. And what it seems to me is a lot of the companies who are trying this and doing this maybe well, it's not so much starting from their IT teams. It's actually more of a marketing arm to and an idea of, you know, something they want to give a a try with. And but they need folks that better understand kind of the ecosystem and what can be done. So my question is for you, are you touching those sorts of roles as well? Like, you know, even social media managers, I know that sounds kind of silly and maybe it's a little low on the pay scale side of things, but like if you need folks that know how to speak the language, you know, are companies looking for that? And is that something that you help companies look for?
Yeah, absolutely. To your point, understanding the community, the landscape, the industry, the domain space, across any of like whatever version of that that is, whether that's Web3 or otherwise, is important. Sometimes it's a little underrated. You know, sometimes companies are like, whatever, marketing's marketing. You know, sales is sales. We've just figured it out. But if you want to be the most successful that you can, it's really, really helpful to have someone who knows what they're dealing with, what they're talking about, and can communicate that to whoever your audience is. And so we do that very often. In fact, it's a really common ask is like, hey, like, can you bring in someone who understands X? Like whatever their role is Y, they also need to understand X. And that might be the community, the industry, the domain, etc. But it's that thing that those two things combined make the ideal hire across whatever space that is, creative, marketing, sales, finance, etc.
So I do have a couple questions. Whether people are, say, engineers or maybe more in some of these separate roles and wanting to elevate their career and they want to make a shift in their professional pathway and they're trying to figure out how to best position themselves to find new employment. When looking at emerging tech just in general, let's just say, you know, what should they be doing? What should they be thinking about to have themselves stand out as a great candidate, you know, for a number of different companies?
Not to kind of sound like I'm using the oldest recruiter advice in the book, but I think it is really important for them. First main thing is like, if you're going to start applying for roles, like target and customize what you're doing. Because mm-hmm. you do, as somebody who's going to be working in frontier, you know, industries, if you have a little bit of experience, how you present that can be just as important. So I know Matt and I were talking the other day about Web3. You know, if you want to make a move into, say, like an exchange, I'll keep using this example. Well, maybe you've worked for a small exchange. Maybe you've worked for, you know, Coinbase or Kraken or Binance. Being able to take that experience, the tools, and literally the projects you've worked on, be able to frame that for the hiring team that you're applying to, that is going to be that kind of, like Matt saying, that holistic packaging of experience. Because at the end of the day, it's not just like, have you used React or Node or Java or C++? It's, have you solved this problem with these tools? Mm-hmm. And if you've used these tools, you know how to solve these problems. Like, it's making sure you articulate that through your application process, because that's what we're looking for. Really, it's like, are we going to hire the individual, like Matt said, who have both the skills and kind of the cognitive know-how to solve this issue that our clients are having?
What's generally a good starting point for someone that maybe doesn't have the work experience, maybe can't necessarily answer some of those questions well yet, but they want to? Like, we've kind of moved beyond the days where people have, you know, a prerequisite on a job posting is like, you know, your 4-year degree or whatever. Like, how are you finding quality candidates are building their skills in an effective way where they can showcase those skills if they don't have the previous work experience?
So the way that this is kind of typical to emerging tech, but the way you go from like, I'm interested to like, professional, this is my career, is by doing anything you can. And what I mean by that is like, start doing it as your hobby. Start building projects. Start putting stuff into a portfolio. It may not be at the professional or career level, but anything that you do there is building relevant skill sets. And especially in emerging tech, as I was mentioning, having an understanding of the community, the industry, the space, the lingo, just the type of people who are involved can be a really valuable asset, usually is a very valuable asset. So to take that, add on to it, like, hey, like, by the way, whatever you are, you're an engineer, you're an accountant, you're whatever. I'm also doing this fun stuff in Web3. I figured out how to do Web3 accounting, whatever that looks like. I figured out how to build this small little tool in, you know, on whatever platform or tool set. It doesn't have to be like, hey, like in order to work at, I don't know, some big crypto company, you have to have done specifically what they're doing. But to be honest, in order to stand out, you need to do something, right? You need to be able to say, I'm working on it. I have this enthusiasm, this passion, this interest. And here's where you can see all of that. That's a big thing. To Dave's point, how you present that, it matters, right? Like, it's one thing to have on your resume and, you know, at the bottom it says interests, blockchain. Great, now I can apply it to all these blockchain companies. Yeah. It's like, okay, so what? I'm assuming anyone applying to a blockchain company, unless it was by accident, has an interest. So, you know, instead it's like, okay, like I took these online courses, or here's a link to my website where you can see all these little things I've built, or, you know, examples of like fake work that I've created just to work on this and have some kind of showcase. There's no magic answer. It's a bunch of little baby steps and incremental things that you do to show your interest, your practice in whatever this is. And put that in front of whoever you're trying to get involved right. in.
And I don't know if this has changed so much, but this has maybe changed the way that I look at the world. But I think traditionally speaking, you'd see a job posting, you'd see the you know, qualification requirements, and it's kind of a checkbox, right? You're kind of going through the list. Do I have this? Check, check, check. And to me, it feels like in some of these emerging tech fields, it's almost like you're creating your own checkbox. Like you're needing to package what you've done and making a case for how you might be able to add some value to that organization. I do wonder for, let's say, someone that has been working for some time, they're a quality candidate in, you know, general terms. When looking at some of these emerging tech companies, especially when they're early seed, startup type, what are the general expectations around compensation? And I don't mean in terms of numbers, but I just think about, you know, you're potentially taking on a riskier role because you don't necessarily know if the company is going to have the success. Yep. You don't know that that company is going to be around as long as you might hope, but maybe you're the type, you're willing to take the risk. You're willing to jump in. You want to be a part of something that's growing. You want to be part of the early story. Sure. So all that's great. But what sorts of things are organizations, companies looking at in terms of compensation for these types of employees? And this might be a super basic question for anyone that's in startup culture, like, but for me, I actually have no idea. What are they wanting?
So normally the startup spiel is, okay, you're probably taking a hit on cash, but here's some equity, you know, have a piece of the company. What that might look like specifically can vary quite a bit. But what I do suggest to people is to do your homework. Figure out what the heck is equity. You know, what does that mean? What does that entail? What does that encompass? And understand what you're giving up for what you potentially are gaining. It's not quite as simple as like, here's like a lottery ticket and hopefully you're, you know, you get to cash it in one day. But sometimes it feels like that. And so if you're the kind of person where you're like, I love it, I want to be able to dream about cashing in that lottery ticket, and like I'm already picturing my whatever, my $50 million payday and what I'm going to do with all this money. That feeling, that kind of vibe of like, I love to dream, the high reward at a high risk potentially is what drives me. Then that equity component is something that you're really going to want to understand, right? Like it's the excitement. It's what a small company can offer you, because frankly, they don't have all the money that bigger companies have. Not that bigger companies always pay the greatest either, but at the very least, you're much more likely in a small company to have that kind of equity component of your compensation. Other things, that intangibles that should hopefully be a factor that you're thinking about, is emerging tech is exciting, right? It's emerging tech for a reason. You can have that impact, that value of being not just a cog in a wheel, but like if you're the first person in a company or the first 100, even the first few hundred people, you're going to make a real impact. You're going to have real tangible impact on the business, on the company, and you're going to be able to do things that you may not have the opportunity to do at other companies. There's a lot of different reasons to be in a startup mm-hmm. or in emerging tech, but a lot of it is driven by your passion, your excitement for opportunity, mm-hmm. for impact, for you know, maybe that payday. But to be honest, if you're really looking for a cash check, you should get into like investment banking and just call it a day or something.
I do. I'm recognizing right now what a newbie I am and an amateur, because I have some questions for you that I think folks who are just familiar with this landscape, they know the answer generally. But I am wondering, you know, for these companies, when they're coming to you and they're, for example, offering equity to their prospective employees, are they coming to you having a game plan? Like they've spoken to their lawyers, they've spoken to their accountants, they have a framework for, you know, how much equity, for example, they're likely planning to share in the first 2 years, and they know how many employees they're expecting that's going to cover. Like, is there a scale here where, that sort of ends, I guess, and to what end do companies come not knowing that and you're helping them?
It's a really good question. Any experienced founder will have those answers. An inexperienced founder, you know, talk to your lawyer, talk to your accountant, but also there are a ton of resources out there. You know, Y Combinator has a guide out there. There's a number of really famous people coming from like A16Z or whatever VC groups out there who've put it out like templates effectively. Mm-hmm. Like you're this stage, this is what percentage of equity you may want to put up. This is how this might roll out to specific roles, like your very senior person, your founder, your executives, or whatever. So there's a lot of resources out there. It is important to get it right. Because you can't take it back. It's not very easy to take it back, I should say. If you put up a certain amount of your company, you have to realize that you are putting up a certain amount of your company. Like if you're saying like, I'm willing to put up 10% of my company to all my employees, that's 10% of the company you no longer own effectively, right? Like you don't get a cash out on that. A really, really amazing example. Locally, Plenty of Fish, 100% equity. Just like $0 went to anyone but that person, right? Like that's amazing. Much harder to do, certainly. So if you're like, okay, my payday was X amount of money and 20%, 30%, 40% of my company now is owned by VCs, is owned by employees or whatnot, you kind of have to scale up what kind of exit you want in order to make your certain goals make sense and align.
It has been funny in the Web3 space in particular, like, you know, in the NFT world of, you know, over the last couple of years, there was just a lot of creative ways people were looking to compensate their teams, which I think was innovative and interesting and created a lot of excitement. But I think in hindsight, ended up with a lot of folks kind of ending up not compensated, but perhaps with some good learning and war wounds and good experiences to help them with their next step. So I am cognizant of time, but I would love to know, you know, if you have any anecdotes or speaking of war stories, anything that you think would be interesting to share with our audience in terms of some of the work that you've done that might be unique to some of this emerging tech world when it comes to recruitment or placement?
Just on the nature of finding talent, I think this is just a fun one. When you get into these kind of more modern niches and tool sets and so on and so forth, like Matt's saying, your search gets to become a little bit funner. In a way, because you're not just on LinkedIn looking for people. I know like there's been points Matt and I have been hanging out in like Reddit subreddits for tools that are very specific to Web3 and attending product demos to learn and talk to the people who are doing like using these tools on a daily basis. So we've had some Web3 clients out of the States where literally I do my recruiting on Reddit, rather than going on like a LinkedIn or something, or a GitHub, Discord. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of really fun ones where you kind of get outside of the norm, where it's just in mail blast everybody. But I know for me, that's kind of some of the fun stuff for me is getting into those like really niche-y places where the really techie people are, and then kind of mm-hmm. see what's happening from there.
I was just gonna say, emerging tech is super funny. Like way back in the day, I had someone, they're like, "Do you know what cryogenics is?" I was like, "No." I was like, literally going back to my computer, Googling, how do you spell cryo? Anyways, it was like super niche. The it was like a purely academic thing at this point. Long story short, I ended up calling like Russian institutions because they had programs that taught it, and like, does someone speak English? Can you connect me to your PhD program? Because I randomly found this guy's PhD paper, and it says like he wrote a paper on this. When you get emerging techs, you get weird niche, like, does it exist in this world type of things that you have to find, and you get to play detective, you get to play researcher, you get to play call center sometimes, where you're just picking up the phone and just, do you know anyone? So there's lots of like really fun things to Dave's points that you get to do when you're doing something really niche. And you also have to pair that with the company. So, you know, from a company standpoint, if I'm hiring for a really big, well-known name, great. You know, I'm hiring for Google. That's an easy conversation. Yeah. You know, what if I'm hiring for Rugal? Oh, you've never heard of Rugal? Like, here's what they do. Here's all this. Here's all the benefits. Here's the compensation. Here's what we're trying to achieve. Here's the impact, the mission, etc. And then circling back to the point about equity. By the way, you know, we pay like middle of the market or below market, but we have a lot of equity. Or, you know, you have to balance all these things to put together a persuasive argument. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, at the end of the day, everyone has to be happy, right? Like, you, the person coming in doing this role has to get a lot of value out of it. The company who's hiring the person has to get value. And so you run into a lot of interesting dilemmas where you're trying to balance everything. Right? Can the company put forward a little bit more money to make this happen for someone who's really awesome? Is the person willing to take a little bit of a cut from where they're at because, you know, this project is awesome. No one else is doing this, or it's just super exciting. You're the only person in this company who's going to be driving this forward. It's a very people-oriented problem. Everyone has to come to the table and figure out, eyes wide open, what are we getting ourselves into? Does it make sense for everyone? The fine balancing act of actually getting everyone to say what they really mean, what they really want, can be a really challenging thing from the talent recruiting side.
Okay, before we go, rapid fire, super serious question. Yep. If you're looking for a job in Web3, as an example, LinkedIn, NFT, PFP, yes or no?
I'm into it personally. It's not necessarily you're going to exist in LinkedIn. Like, I'm probably going to find you somewhere on like Twitter or like a Discord. And if you have like an actual nice NFT, PFP, it's credibility, right? At the end of the day, you know, like, I love that stuff. And if you're going to look for someone who's in Web3, you're going to want someone who's in Web3.
Yeah, there you go. Awesome. Well, all right. Thank you so much, you guys, for joining me today. It was such a valuable conversation, lots of insights. It's really interesting to dive into some of the nuances of how, you know, employers and business owners and startups are thinking about talent and acquisition and hiring. I think it's a tough thing to begin with, let alone adding emerging tech as a layer on top of it all. Before we go, Matthew, Dave, where can our audience find you and the company? And we will put the links in the show notes so you don't have to spell it all out, but maybe you can give us the best places to find you.
You can definitely check us out at inveniotalent.com. I'm easiest to grab on LinkedIn for sure, but you can definitely find us on Twitter, Instagram. I think we're like on all the socials for the most part. Personally, like I said, for me, LinkedIn is where I live most of the days.
It makes sense that you would be there. Dave, yeah, that's where I think we first connected, was on LinkedIn. So very active on there. And you guys obviously share a lot of interesting things, through your channels as well. So I would encourage everybody to find Matt and Dave and Invenio on their website, and we will have all the links there. So you guys, cheers. Thank you so much. Maybe we can grab another conversation in the future, talk about this evolving landscape. I hope you all have a wonderful day, and everyone listening, thank you so much for tuning in to From the Blockchain. See you next week. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of From the Blockchain. I really hope you enjoyed the show. If you have any ideas about future episodes, including themes or potential guests, please check for a link in the show notes. Happy to hear from you. Also, if you're interested in being a potential sponsor for From the Blockchain, I'd love to hear from you as well. Check for a special link just for you in the show notes. All right, everybody, again, thanks for being here. Love the show. Love being with you. Please remember to subscribe, review, and share with your friends. Until next week, have a great one.